Welcome to Digitally Creative. I'm your host, Vincent Ferrari, and joining me this week is a maker and a podcast host and someone who's one of the head high muckety mucks of Instructables. She'll deny it, but she is, and we all know it. I have the one and only Jessie Ratfink on this week. Hi, Jessie. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. A little nervous, but good.
I love that you're a little bit nervous, and you are the co-host of a podcast. So
I still haven't gotten used to it. It's still really bizarre. Like, sometimes I'll be browsing YouTube on our TV in the living room, and like, our podcasts will pop up, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm on the screen. I just can't handle it. It's real weird.
I had the same thing when I started doing this show on YouTube, because in the initial run of this podcast, Because We Make, we only did the audio version of the show. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing video, it was like looking at myself the first few episodes. I'm like, oh, you don't look at the camera. Like, you're not doing anything correctly. Like, everything's wrong. And eventually you kind of get a feel for it. Like, you know, at least when you're talking, look at the camera. So it's like,
I'm still bad at that. I have to admit, like, when I watch it back to pull reels, mm-hmm. I'll see myself and I'm like looking this way and that, like, I'm looking everywhere, but
you're doing memes. You're making memes.
Yeah, it's hard. It's just, I don't know. My corners are really interesting, I guess.
It was when you were on the first time with Grant. I think you're on with Grant and Adam. I think the first time you might have been.
Morley was
been
there too. Yeah, it was like episode 36.
It was very early. It was in their first year, and I remember thinking, it's very funny because I remember thinking like, "Wow, she sounds like she just kind of fits right in. Like if she wanted to just sit in there and just do this gig with them, you know, it would work." So when Grant and Adam started looking for a new co-host, Grant messaged me one night. He goes, you know, we were talking. I said, how's the search for a new co-host going? And he said, we found a person. He goes, and I won't tell you who it is. He goes, this is what he told me. He goes, I won't tell you who it is, but if you guess it, I will confirm it. If you guess correctly. I was like, oh. I said, do I get a hint of any kind? He goes, former guest. And I swear
That's
to you.
Still a huge pull.
I swear to you, and you can check with Grant. He will tell you this is the truth. I picked you immediately. You were the first choice. And I was like, I said, oh, you got Jessie. And he goes, yeah. Like he was kind of surprised that I guessed it that quick. I said the chemistry that you guys had together was really, really good. It felt natural. The conversation didn't stall out in the middle, which, you know, sometimes it happens with guests. It's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, the natural interaction of someone you're not interacting with all the time. Yeah. But you guys had really good chemistry then, and it's only gotten better since you became a co-host on the show. So a couple of questions. So the first one is, how did it feel when Grant said, hey, would you like to be a co-host? And how much convincing did he have to do? And B, how are you enjoying being a co-host?
Basically, he asked me in Instagram DMs if I would be interested. And typically, this would be something that I would talk myself out of. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not comfortable on camera. I have like really bad imposter syndrome. So it probably would have been something like 5 years ago that I would have been like, no, I can't. I'm terrified. But I just said yes immediately, which is really weird for me. But you know, I'm in therapy and I'm trying new things. So it was just like, let's just go for it. Cause the only thing that might happen is that I suck at it and I just don't do it anymore. So yeah. And as far as how I'm feeling, better, but still very nervous.
Okay.
Video is just very strange to me because like it's just out there and it just lives there and you can't go back and make edits because I'm very used to doing a lot of text stuff. And so it's like, you know, I can always reassure myself, well, if I don't do that great, I'll just go back and edit. You can't really do that with this, but it's kind of been nice not being the person in charge, you know, like Grant is like our ringleader over there. So it's nice to kind of just sit back and go with it and not have to do a ton of planning or worrying now. Like I really worried at first, but I feel like I've gotten a little more relaxed about it. Well, but
that is something I was thinking about because your job at Instructables, you're not like quote on camera. You're kind of, you're more, you're semi behind the scenes. I won't say behind the scenes because, but your, you know, what the work you put out is either photography of actual items and work, or it's text. It's not, hi, look at me, you know, which is, there is a certain amount of that in podcasting where if you're not comfortable doing that, it's really hard to get comfortable doing that, where it's like, oh, I'm the center of attention for a minute and I don't really like it and I'm not used to it.
Yeah, and I never like it. Like, I'm always the person like at parties hanging out with the dog in the corner. Like, I don't want to be the center of attention ever. So it's definitely had a, I've just gotten a little nervous sometimes. Like, I'll be talking and I'll just be like, do I even know what I'm saying anymore? Like, is this even English? Like, I just get really panicked sometimes in the middle of long tangents. So
the worst, especially when you have co-hosts, like, and you have two of them, so it's even harder. Like, when I had a co-host, I had Ethan, and then later on I had Brooke. And when I had a co-host, I would be talking, and at some point I'd be like, are they being polite and giving me space? Have they lost their internet connection? Or is this like, are they falling asleep? Like, you never know. Like, where's the balance in there? Like, are we still having a conversation? Am I boring you to tears? Like, you don't know. And you just have to, you kind of just have to just go, I'm doing the best I can, and it's just going to have to work out. But you guys have hit a good stride. I think it's, you know, the initial transition of having you join, usually when somebody comes in, it disrupts things. And you didn't really, there wasn't like that speed bump when you joined the show. It was just kind of like, you just kind of slid into the seat, just like I kind of expected you to. And it was like, oh yeah, Jesse's a co-host now.
Yeah, oh, I'm still surprised. It's still very weird. Like, my mom will call me and be like, oh, I heard on the podcast this week. And I'm like, oh my God.
My mom's listening to podcasts.
Yeah. It's just, oh my gosh. It's very strange. And like, people that I knew from high school, you know, like, oh my God, you're famous now. Like, I don't know about that, guys.
Oh, the best
is, sure. I'm just on the internet.
The best is you get random messages, like somebody be like, I saw you on Spotify. I'm like, yeah, I'm just there. Like, it's just a thing. It just happens, you know.
Yeah. I mean, God, at least I have like some experience with that with Instructables because like I did get shared in weird places back in the day. And so at least that's not entirely new. It's just everything else is.
Let's talk about for a second, because we've talked about, obviously we're talking about, we've never mentioned, actually mentioned Grant, Adam and Morley, but never mentioned that Clamp is the podcast you're a co-host of.
Yep.
But besides from being the co-host of Clamp, you work at Autodesk for Instructables.
And yep. Instructables and Tinkercad now these days.
Oh, you work at Tinkercad. I didn't realize that you work for Tinkercad also. See,
yep.
I always felt like Tinkercad people kind of gave it a bad rap. Like, they don't realize the power of it because it's so obvious what you can do. But it's also like, it requires a little bit of creative thinking to really make it do some things.
Yeah, a lot of creative thinking. Yeah.
I've heard from a lot of people who have no ability to do anything in Fusion 360 that can sit there and do some crazy things in Tinkercad. It's one of the craziest little programs that ever existed, and it wasn't always Autodesk, right? It was an independent thing, and then it became Autodesk bought them.
Yeah, 2011, 2012, 2013, somewhere in there.
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah,
we used to have 1-2-3D, and then Tinkercad replaced 1-2-3D. Yeah, I'm so happy that we have like. So the Instructables community team basically started working with Tinkercad, and now we're officially part of the team that we can do videos and blog posts and all this stuff and sort of, get the word out about all the cool things it can do. Because, I mean, right now the ISTE Education Conference is happening in Philadelphia, and so a lot of the team is there. And it's like every time I've worked that, people – do not know that we have circuits. They don't know that we have any sort of code block program. Like, they don't know half the stuff that we can do.
The circuits are such a cool, that is one of the coolest functions that when it was added, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, granted, it's never going to be the same as like having a breadboard in front of you and putting components down. But if you're just prototyping something, just trying to see, hey, would this work? You can go pretty far. You can go pretty far really with what's built in. So what do you do specifically for Autodesk and for Instructables and for Tinkercad? So get a better idea of what your day job looks like. Because we know the cool stuff you make at night, which if you're watching on video, you probably should be watching on video, because I actually see one of those embroidery hoops is, I am literally containing myself from laughing at it. It's the one with the cat and it says Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one. But just before we go too far into that, why don't you tell people a little bit about your day job and what you do?
Sure. So I do community management and social media, I guess, kind of marketing. Everything, though, for us is organic. We don't do any paid marketing. So it's most of my day, honestly, is spent drafting up social media posts or editing blog posts or making videos. So, yeah, a lot of my day is taken up with making creative stuff. But it's all digital. I don't really do anything physical anymore. For the last couple months, it's been all Tinkercad Sim Lab, because that's like our newest environment that we released in the 3D editor, which is kind of like physics plus materials. So, you know, you can do a little bit more with it now. So I've been making a lot of videos about that. And then, of course, our contests. We don't have too many people doing it. There's like three of us that look through every single contest entry, like this week for the yard is closing. So we've got to go through all of those and pick finalists and then judge those contests.
That blew my mind, because you mentioned that on Clamp in one episode. I forgot what we were all taught.
I do that too.
What you guys were talking about. And you mentioned that like there's such a small team that review all the contest entries. And I'm like, how is that possible? Like, I can only imagine what the volume looks like, and to have such a small group of people reviewing it all, like, I'd be terrified.
It's tough and kind of scary. Yeah. Because it's, I don't know, I think I'd take it way too seriously, but that's probably a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
For me, I get so worried about making sure every entry gets a good look. Because, you know, sometimes people are not good with their presentation, but the actual project is super solid and really interesting. And it might be something totally new that we've not seen, but, you know, like their introduction isn't great and their main image isn't great. And it might be something that we would just pass over if we didn't read it deep enough.
Right.
So, yeah, it eats up a lot of time. It's better than it used to be, but just because we've cut back on the contests a bit, we used to do like 8 a month. And we're going a lot slower than that now.
I was actually wondering.
That was crazy.
I was wondering, because contests have been a big part of Instructables for a long time, and I've always wondered this. And now that I have you here, captive audience, I can ask the hard-hitting questions. But
yeah.
The thing I've always wondered is, do you have, I don't know how to phrase this, so I'm just going to kind of ask it. It should make sense. Mm-hmm. Do you have experts that review the projects to make sure they're feasible and are not dangerous or potentially harmful? Like for example, if somebody designs a chair and they hold it together with thumbtacks, right? Is there somebody that's a woodworker that goes, that's probably a dumb idea? Like, because like there's I know a lot of things, but I don't know everything about everything. So how do you guys vet the projects at all that people submit in the contest or for the site? Like, yes. How does that work?
We do vet them. Every contest entry is looked at by one of us.
Okay.
And right now that's mostly Randolfo and Penelope Bulnick, because I'm doing a bunch of videos and stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, they look at every single one, and we do not allow things that are obviously dangerous into our contests. You know, flamethrowers, Lichtenberg burning, just, you know, using a microwave in weird ways. Just there's so much stuff that we've seen over the years that we know, like, this is not okay. Or especially when it comes to, like, sharp projectiles or anything that's done we have to be really careful with that, too. Like, especially because we went in a more education, you know, focus the past few years. So, yeah, we are doing a very basic sort of safety check.
Okay.
And then if it gets through from us, like, if we think it's okay, normally a community member will flag it and just be like, what the hell are you guys doing? And then we'll
take
it down.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I mean, we are all pretty much jack of all trades. We know a little bit about everything, but there's some stuff that we're going to miss.
Right. I've seen, there was a time, and the reason I ask is because I don't know if you remember this, it was about 6 or 7 years ago. There was this crazy trend when air conditioners, for some reason, were in very short supply. And people were making these dry ice and fan in a cooler, air conditioners.
Yep.
And I remember I was watching one of the science YouTubers and he goes, well, that's a great way to asphyxiate yourself. And I started thinking, I'm like, oh, wow, he's right. Like, if you're just blowing dry ice around in an enclosed area, yeah, that's not particularly smart. And but I didn't know that until somebody said it. Like, I didn't think of it. Obviously, and when somebody points it out, you go, of course. But
yeah. Yeah. We let our community do a lot of that stuff. Like,
that's good.
Especially like if something goes in the newsletter and it is not safe, people will let us know for the next year. Like, it's just going to be all over there. You know, and some of the people are nicer than others.
Sure.
Some people are very great and being like, hey, it's really awesome that you took the time and energy to do this, but I have some suggestions. And some other people are just like, you fucking suck. And it's just like all they have to offer. So yeah, our community is really great at, like, you know, letting us know when something is wrong. And then, yeah, we just kind of use common sense because we've seen so much sketchy stuff. But like you were talking about with like a chair made with thumbtacks, that is something that, yeah, we would just let up on the site if it was documented well enough. And yeah, we just let the community talk about it in the comments because, gotcha. You know, I don't know. It's a fine line to tread because we don't really want to moderate that much, but well, we do want to make sure, you know, that
right.
people are safe.
You want to have a light, hand or as light a hand, because I was thinking more along the lines of like, are you worried about, you know, liability issues or anything like that? You know, it's like, that's why I was wondering, because the longevity of Instructables is remarkable. Like, that site, I feel like that site's been around as long as like websites have been around.
It's 2005 was when it started. Yeah.
Which makes sense, because that's around the time. I mean, I was already on the internet at that point, but I feel like that was when the internet really started. Like, really everybody was on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was so busy back in the day.
It's an adult. It's an adult. It's 18.
Yeah. Right. We got our like 15 year staff hoodies, you know, a few years ago, and that blew my mind. It was just,
have you been there since the beginning?
I've been posting on the site since the beginning, but I've been working there since 2012. So a little over a decade. Yeah.
That's fantastic. It must be a hell of a place to work to stay there for 10 years, 12 years.
I mean, it's just, I don't know that I would have many chances to have this amazing creative job. Mm-hmm. So I just want to hold on to it as long as I can, because it's like, before this, I only worked retail and my degree is in public health, which is not quite as fun. So it's just like, I'm just going to cling to this
especially
for as
now.
Long as I can. Oh yeah. Especially now. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's I imagine when Autodesk took over, it was a little bit like, uh-oh. You know, like, there had to be that moment where everybody was like, oh God, they're going to kill the vibe of this place. Like, everyone had to think the Death Star was eating a planet here.
So, funny enough, I actually came to start my month-long artist in residence at Instructables the day that it was official that Autodesk bought us. So
you never knew it beforehand, really?
I didn't. Well, I had been out to intern for like a week in, I think, 2008. But yeah, I had never actually like worked there until Autodesk had taken over. And so, yeah, I remember Eric and Christy, who were the Instructables bosses then, picking me up at the airport and telling me everything. And yeah, the vibe in the office was a little nervous. People were a little quiet. They didn't really know. But we went to a party that night at One Market, which is the main San Francisco office. Mm-hmm. And everyone was so excited about us. They were so happy that we were there and just like, you know, excited of all the possibilities that we had, just because we were the creative people and we were the people that actually made things. And we all kind of turned around after that. Like, Carl Bass was the CEO then. Great guy. I love that dude. We used to all call him Uncle Carl because he would like finance the craziest stuff, the craziest projects for us to do. But yeah, we were like a novelty for the first few years. And like, I don't know, it went really, really well. And when we stepped back from making things and we went into sort of an education focus, things were tougher then. I think that was actually the harder sort of thing to vault just because, you know, we aren't educators. Right. And it was such a weird and like very specific sort of website for makers.
Sure.
So we kind of, yeah, we had to change a lot of what we thought and what we wanted as far as content. You know, it's not like we could do LED pasties or a baby flask anymore. Like, people are probably not going to be into that. So, yeah, I think it was really great at first, you know, because we had more money for contests and we had official rules. Like, we had all this nice legalese that we got from Autodesk and like we're able to upgrade a lot of our processes with that. So, yeah, while we were scared, I think it turned out really, really well. And
I've been continually surprised at, you know, Autodesk has been around for literally forever. Like, it feels like they're one of those companies that, you know, when you become aware of technology, like, everyone's heard of AutoCAD. You know, granted, in our community, more people have probably used Fusion 360, but everyone's heard of AutoCAD, like everyone and their brother. And you associate a company with one product and you see them doing this crazy branching out that they're doing. And you're like, oh my God, they're becoming this tentacled machine. That's like, you know, they're buying up all these great little apps and integrating them into Fusion 360. And they're buying up, they bought up Tinkercad and they bought Instructables. And it's like, but then when you start to see it all come together, you're like, oh, this actually all kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, they want the community management and the community management experience of Instructables to kind of help make Tinkercad better. And they want Tinkercad's ease of use to kind of influence Fusion 360. And they want some of the features from Fusion 360 to make Tinkercad more than a toy that's used in like kindergarten classroom. Yeah. And you start seeing it all come together. And it's like, wow, they've just kind of integrated all their products in such a neat, cohesive way. It's kind of impressive because big old companies don't tend to do that very well. And Autodesk seems to have done a pretty good job of it. I mean, I say that now. It's just so I can put a timestamp on that. It's June 27th, 2023. If that changes in a year, I don't want to hear it. But, you know, as of right now, they seem to be doing a pretty good job.
Well, and honestly, I think we keep doing a good job just because we have a new chief marketing officer and she has very modern views on what we should be doing. And
that's great.
Yeah, I feel like things are getting better and that there's going to be more of a focus on early education, you know, for Tinkercad, because right now we don't really get any focus on us. We're just kind of the miracle product that Autodesk has that everybody knows about, but they might not necessarily know it's Autodesk.
Sure.
I'm hoping we're going to keep moving in the right direction because she definitely is a lot more savvy about, you know, the image that we want to give off and how we want to present ourselves, because we have kind of been that stuffy tech monolith for a really long time. So it's like, I'm excited for it to be a little more interesting because, yeah, it's been kind of lacking the past few years in marketing.
Even with all the acquisitions and stuff, the company doesn't feel like Darth Vader. You know, it doesn't feel like it's like ending tomorrow. And I guess that's got to be a good thing. Like, you're working there and everything's kind of okay. It's kind of nice where it's not like, you know, there are bigger companies where it's like, oh yeah, no, we're about to lay off 25,000 people. And it's like, oh, you know, but that's not good. I'm very happy it's working out for the people that are there, because in the interactions I've had over the years with anyone that's been connected to any of the products on any of the on any of the product lines, it's always been like, yeah, no, we like working here and we're excited about the products that we make, you know, no matter what product they work on, they're excited about the product they make. So
yeah, that's definitely the one like really good thing about my job is just that I'm very, very, very positive about Instructables and Tinkercad. I mean, it's hard not to be, really, because, you know, with Instructables, we have like such a big community of people who've been posting for years. And I just like, that just is very exciting to me that people want to share things for free still. And then with Tinkercad, just working on social media and seeing all the kids using it,
it's, you know, always like kids kindergartners doing crazy
and first
things.
Graders. And I'm just like, oh my God, they're 3D printing in their classroom. It just makes me so happy.
I love it when you watch. It's always the same kind of vibe. You watch, you know, they show, you know, every news channel B-roll of 3D printing in education. They show a 3D printing farm of enclosed printers because every school has some kind of enclosed printer. And then they pan to a, you know, kids moving a mouse and staring at a screen. And then when they show the screen, it's Tinkercad. Like every time. It's always Tinkercad. It's like, wow, they have cornered a market that other people just didn't even like consider.
Yeah. And I really just think it's because I don't know how much you know about like the Tinkercad features for teachers, but we've basically, so a lot, you know, like Fusion 360 and a lot of the higher level softwares, they make it a lot easier for you to sort of run a class as a teacher. And so we've brought that into Tinkercad. So yeah, they can have classrooms for all of their different classes and they can assign different projects and they can like, I don't know. We've just tried to make it very easy and streamlined so that they aren't having to spend forever setting things up.
I'm looking at that now on the website. I had no idea this exists. That's actually pretty brilliant. That's I remember my ex-wife brought she's a teacher in the Bronx, and she brought 3D printing pens to school to do a lesson with the kids. So I had the cheap monoprice 3D printing pen. And she's like, I'm going to bring it to school and just see if the kids enjoy it. And I was like, well, you know what? They're $30. Let's get another one. So at least there's two. Because it's like, it's hard to deal with just one. So she brought home, one of the kids made me, he made a Dominican flag for me as a thank you for sending the printers with Miss Beth. That's what I was told.
Yeah.
And she's like, I was told I have to give this to you. Because he was really happy that he got to play with a 3D pen. And I'm so looking at this thing going, a kid made this? Like, I can't get this pen to do anything. And you start seeing what these kids are doing, and it's like, it's amazing. And they get so excited about it. And, you know, as much as kids tend to be screen-focused and kind of disconnected in a weird way, they're not hopeless. They're not hopeless. No. Like, if you just have to grab their attention. That's the one thing. Attention is hard, and you have a very short window with which to grab it. But if you grab it, you got it, and you own it, and it's very hard to lose it once you get it. So,
yeah. Well, and I think kids these days are so much smarter than we were just because they have so many different inputs all the time. Like, there's so much information that they have that I don't think I would have at their age, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I just feel like it's so much more challenging.
They didn't have to unlearn.
Something that keeps me really busy at work. Yeah, thinking like, how can I make this appealing and enticing to a teenager? Like that is definitely tough. Like, teachers are a much easier group to market to than teenagers.
100%. I was thinking this the other day, like all the stuff that we had to unlearn to learn. Like, I don't know how old you are. You don't have to tell me, but I'm 47. And for a 47-year-old person, like, I was born right. Everything has literally changed a million times over. Like, society has had three revolutions just in the time I'm alive, as far as technology and the way we do things and the way things exist. And it, you know, luckily I'm into technology, so I kind of get excited by this stuff. So I dive in head first. But I know people my age that are just lost. Like, they don't know what to do because they can't unlearn. Like, they want their rotary phone. You know, those are my friends, and everyone listening to this has this one or two friends. They call you on the phone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, why are you calling me? Like, that's rude. Like, don't call me. Like, text me. Text me, or at least text me first and say, hey, can I call?
Let me know.
Let me know a call is coming. It's like, no, we're calling. That's what we do. We call each other.
Yeah, I am 38, so I same thing. You know, I sort of like graduated high school right when the internet was taking off and then like got completely sucked into that for my college years, and then, you know, the economy completely defaulted and bowed out when I graduated college. So it's just
That was why. It was you. Ooh, it was you. They're like,
it might have been me.
We got this Jesse person needs a job. Like, no.
She's very important. She needs all of the money from everyone and all of the jobs.
Just suck all the oxygen right out of the room. There it goes. Yeah, I can only imagine what that must be like you're starting what you think is your, you know, your adult life. And your initial your initial visit into the adult world is, oh yeah, the most colossal collapse of the economy in 80 years. Good job. Here you go. Find a job. Have a nice one. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, that, well, and that was why I ended up at Instructables, honestly, mm-hmm. because I really did want to do something in public health. I mean, Kentucky, where I grew up, is really hurting for it. Like, mm-hmm. oh, they're at the bottom of everything. It's just really bad. But I don't know. I was looking everywhere and all of the jobs I needed, like, 5 years of program planning experience, and I needed mm-hmm. all of this stuff that I was like, I just graduated and I don't know how I get that. And yeah, so when I went to intern for like a month, the next month, I pretty much, like, at the end of that, I was just like, Eric and Christy, if you would like me, I will move to California for you because I don't have any other prospects.
So yeah. you said you started as an artist in residence there? Did mm-hmm. I hear that correctly? Wow. Yep. So as an artist in residence, was that like a permanent position, or was it like a timed position where they were expecting you to be there for X number of years, or like how did that work?
So we were doing it for months. I think it was between 1 and 3 months for most people. And then you would get like a stipend of $1,500 a month, and they would pay for all your like tools and materials that you needed.
Nice.
So it was a pretty good thing because, like, damn. I remember just being like, oh my God, I'm going to get paid twice because, like, I had enough vacation time saved up at my job. And, like, I was just thrilled about that. Yeah. I was just like, I get paid for this? This is amazing. Yeah.
So does it ever hit you that, like, I really hate that I'm not doing anything with my degree? Because yes. I know, I'm only saying that because I know so, I don't know. Of all the people I know, I think I know about 4 people who are actually working in their area of study from college, and they're all bitter about it because it's like, except for the fact that I have a college degree, there is no connection to what I did in college to what I'm doing in the real world. And I always like feel like, oh, I feel so bad for you. Like, I'm not bad, like, oh, I can't believe you did that, but more like, how does that feel? Like, public health is a big freaking deal, and mm-hmm. you're doing something that's completely unrelated. Like, does it ever hit you like, why did I go through all that hell to get that degree?
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, well, and especially, so my partner Tyler, mm-hmm. like, you know, he doesn't have a college degree, mm-hmm. and he's like managing all of these, you know, like the 2 stores we have locally and doing so much stuff. Like, well, and I guess just because I know so many people, who didn't go to college, and they're fine. They're doing fine. They went into the trades, or they drive a truck, or mm-hmm. like, there's so many people I knew that they got along just fine. Whereas, I struggled forever to pay stuff off, and mm-hmm. it was just like working full time, going to school full time. It was hell. And so, sometimes I think, maybe I should have just made more stuff in my apartment and dropped out of school. But I guess it's good to like have it to fall back on, you know, like if I do ever get fired from Autodesk because I'm not leaving voluntarily,
it's a hell of a fallback position.
I'd probably honestly have to study a bit again because I would have to be like certified again and get back into it. It would definitely be tricky, but at least it's a backup, I guess. Sure. It could be worse,
Absolutely. And you got the podcasting thing, and you guys are making millions on the podcast. So good too.
Yep. I'm sure super rich from that. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Bought this house.
Yeah. That's three millionaires every week on Clamp. That's what the M in Clamp stands for. Millionaires creating living and millionaire podcast. That's what it stands for.
It's true.
So
imagine we would be so horrible to listen to if it was 3 millionaires on a podcast. That would be
I have a hard time. And it's funny because I was watching, I won't call the person out because I don't call people out. It's not what I do. But I was watching a YouTube video today, and somebody was talking about a very expensive equipment purchase. And it was just like, oh, look what I did. This is cool. And I'm thinking like, yeah, that's cool. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, did you really pay for that? Like, that's all I'm thinking. Like, I've seen, so there is one particular maker who I've talked privately to my friends about. And I was like, do you ever notice that that maker had one brand of tools? That was the brand. Own that brand. Own no other brand. That's the brand. And then they stopped paying the bills and the color of all the tools changed. And it's like, it's one of the things that I find so icky about our community, because there's a lot of, it's not the sponsorship. I don't mind. Go get your money. Like, if there's money on the table, take it. It's yours. Like, put your hand out, cover it up, and slide it back to yourself. That's your money. Good on you. But I really, it leaves such a bad taste in my mouth when it's not so much in the moment, but in hindsight, you go, oh, you never really liked their tools. Because when they stop paying you to use them, you stop using them. So you never really liked them. You just like being paid to use them. There's so much of that in this community. It's unbelievable.
There really is. And I think that's why, part of why I've stayed really just in the Instructables ecosystem. Because I definitely do struggle with the more sort of optimized life view that YouTubers and Instagrammers tend to take with everything that they put out.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, I do the same thing. Like, I'm watching a video and I'm just wondering, like, okay, so who sponsored this and who paid mm-hmm. for all of this stuff? And like, was this their idea or did the company pitch it? Because, you know, I have so much experience through Instructables with sponsorship and all of that mm-hmm. stuff. I'm always thinking that. And then it sort of takes away from, I don't know, the reality that they're trying
sure.
to show.
No, 100%. That's why, you know, I don't, and it's funny because when I've talked to some people, like, well, what do you have against sponsors? Nothing. I think sponsors are great. But I think when you pivot your whole ethos around this being the best, and then as soon as somebody else offers you a dollar, you take the money.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it wasn't the best. Maybe it was the ones that were paying the bills. You know, there was one person, I don't remember who it was, and I would give them credit if I remember, but they used to say, you know, right at the beginning, you know, this video is sponsored by Rockler. And you look mm-hmm. at every tool in the video is Rockler, but that's fine. That was, every video was sponsored by Rockler. Every tool in every video was a tool that Rockler sold. I'm fine with that. Like, that's exactly what I want to see. I want to know. But now people mm-hmm. are so blurring the lines. Like, oh, my, every tool's orange and black. Everything is orange and black. I have a rigid banner in the back. But don't worry, they're the best. Wink, wink. They didn't give me that banner. Wink, wink, wink. So.
Yeah, but well, it's not even makers. Like, just makers, I guess I should say. Because I notice other, like, dog accounts, like, humor accounts.
Oh, yeah.
Those people are doing this, too. And, yeah, blurring the lines, not being truthful mm-hmm. about how they got it. And it's just... Yeah, well, it's too much for me.
I got a very dark education. So in my former company, we made consumer electronics. And I got a very good education in what it means to work with influencers.
I can only imagine.
And the questions. So there are questions like, we want to send the product to you. Okay, how much are you paying? Okay, fine. Obviously, you're supposed to get paid to promote my product. I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. That's the way this works, right? That's a fair arrangement. But then you start getting the other questions. Do I have to mention that this is sponsored? The hell mm-hmm. do you mean, do you have to mention it? I thought that was the default, and apparently it's not. So now you have to look at every single person that has a product in their videos and go, I wonder. Like, I wonder. You know, there are some channels out there like Project Farm. He takes no sponsorships. Torque Test Channel, no sponsorships. They don't do sponsors of any kind. You can trust what they have to say. You can mm-hmm. trust some of the sponsored channels too. But man, I realized a long time ago that a grain of salt is one of the best tools you can carry around with you when you're watching stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, definitely. It's, some people just care more about their brand than... actually showing you what they're really doing.
So when you're not being podcast famous and you're not being the queen of all things at Instructables, what do you do? What kind of stuff do you make? What do you do in your spare time? What does your maker life look like?
So it's been kind of lackluster for the last few years, honestly, to be like completely transparent. Just because, you know, life gets hard sometimes. And
life gets in the way of a lot of things.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I would say that my major interests right now are embroidery and 3D printing.
Okay.
I I definitely, like, I want to move up to Fusion 360. I've got sort of like an intro to it from one of my awesome coworkers at Autodesk, but I need to learn a lot more. And so I've been focusing on that. And then, yeah, just really wanting to get back into embroidery. I don't think that I will make it a business. Like, I don't know that I will be selling them anymore, but I just, you know, I enjoy selling the patterns, and I would really like to get back into drawing and, you know, making physically, just because everything has been so digital for a really long time. And then beyond that, I do a lot of yard work. Anyone that's listened to Clamp has probably heard me talk about yard work. I am kind of addicted to it. We have 11 acres of land here.
Oh, my. So,
yeah. And I'm mowing it with a push mower, which is not great. It's like a Craftsman M140, I think, push mower.
You know what? I guess if you're going to do it, you know what? Get the workout, get the exercise.
Yeah, that's
especially
how I feel
there.
About it. Yeah, Austin does not feel that way. He's like, you should just pay somebody to do it. It's like, no, I'm fine. I like it.
Not surprised by that.
Yeah. But yeah, I do a lot of that because I'm trying to have more biodiversity in my yard. That's my new thing.
Okay.
So I've been cutting down a lot of the tall grass and running over all of the flowers after they bloom and dry out, so the seeds go everywhere. And so that has been like my big thing for the past couple years, which is not exciting, but I love it. Like, I'll do it. Like, I think yesterday I mowed for 3.5 hours just while listening to podcasts. So
stuff,
yeah,
like
I do that.
I find stuff like that, you know, I find stuff like that therapeutic. I really do. Like, you know, everybody in our community always jokes about how much they hate sanding. I don't hate sanding. Sanding is the greatest thing in the world for just menial, no thought labor. Like, mark it up with a pencil, put your podcast on, and just sit there. Like, I worked on a project with Al at New York Woodworks. It was basically 6 days, 5 or 6 days of just sanding. That was all I did for 6 days, was sand. And I didn't mind. Like, I didn't mind. Like, if I had more time and he wasn't 2 hours away, I would voluntarily just go and sand for him, because it was just the easiest thing in the world to do. It's like, it's so great to be able to just zone out, know that it's a low consequence thing. Like, the world's not going to explode if you sand, just sand a little more, it'll look fine. You know, it's wonderful. I love doing stuff like that. So yeah, mowing for 3 hours while listening to podcasts, that sounds like heaven to me.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, especially because it's like I can get my horror fix and my workout fix, like, all at the same time, because that's normally what I do, to be honest. Yeah. But speaking of sanding, I do also like sanding, but I only really like it if I'm doing it by hand. Anytime I'm actually using a sander, I hate that vibration feeling that you get in your hands after a while and you just can't get rid of it. So it's like, for me, it's got to be like a sanding block or...
I got spoiled. I got spoiled. So Al has all Festool sanders.
Oh, nice.
I got spoiled. Okay. I readily admit that I don't sand that long with my own sander, because I have two Ryobi sanders. But Al has Festool sanders. And yeah, it's a very different sanding experience when you sand with a very good sander. I never understood it. I never understood it. I was always like, how could you spend $300 on a sander? Now I get it. Not only do I understand, I'm trying to work it into my own budget. I'm like,
yes, exactly. Yeah, I will definitely be upgrading ours before I do another furniture project. That is for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
I like vibrated my hands off we found this like beautiful vintage sewing table. It's probably from the 1960s. Mm-hmm. All wood. Found it just on the street in Oakland. And I spent like the whole weekend sanding all the paint off and working on it. And I swear to God, I couldn't feel my hands for like 2 days. Like, there's just like, I was touching my fingers and just like, no, it's gone. No feeling, none.
I have a definite set of feelings around taking finish off. Like, because one of the things, so the thing that we were working on, it was this white oak table. It was like 8-quarter white oak. So 2 inches thick, the top. It was 6 feet wide by 12 feet long. The top weighed about 300 pounds. I'm not exaggerating this, by the way. Al and I moving it was not even possible. Like, we had to get, he has a landscaping company. He had people his people, mm-hmm. the young guys came in and helped us, took yeah. the four of us to turn it around, to sand the other side. And that had to be one of the hardest things I've ever dealt. Yeah, no, I'm a podcast host. I can talk, everybody.
Got it.
One of the hardest yeah. things I've ever dealt with was getting the approximately 52 layers to finish off this table. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where I was like we sanded a lot of it, but it was still deeply in the grain. So I brought my belt sander with like 40 grit sandpaper on it. And I was just slashing with the grain, so it didn't look silly. And I was just slashing at it, and then went over everything again with 120. And it was baby butt smooth when I was done with it. But taking off finish was brutal. Like, I never want to do that again. Like, I want to do that chemically or, like, aggressively mechanically.
I was just
from
about
now
to
on.
Bring up. Yeah, I think next time I would try chemically at first just to see if it works. Because, like, oh, my God. Yeah, it takes so long. If you do it right, at least.
You know what I learned? I learned that poly is very durable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, and that was a lot of the, like, trouble with the table. Because the top of the sewing table was painted this bright red, and there were so many coats. But yeah, the legs were coated in poly, and I just felt like I was sanding those for days. It just forever.
We were very lucky. We were very lucky in that we were able to get the table apart. So like I brought my jaw horse up there, and that thing is amazing. Like it took these big giant legs, and I just slapped them in the jaw horse and stopped. The jaw horse, for those of you that have seen it, Triton makes them. They're called Super Jaws, but everybody else calls them Jaw Horse. And it's basically this thing where you throw something and you stomp on a lever and it locks it in there. Like it holds it like a big, huge clamp. And it's an amazing thing to have in your shop if you do anything with large pieces of wood. And I'm just sitting there hogging material. I'm like, how deep does this finish go? And you just keep going and going and going and going. And now when I was done, I ended up looking at it going, I don't feel like I did anything because it didn't look any different. And then you look at like, I missed a side on one of the legs and it was like, wow. Okay. There's hope.
Yeah. See a little bit of the progress.
Exactly.
Make yourself continue going.
I feel like that's what keeps you going in a project, right? When you when you hit like some kind of milestone where you can see you can start to see the project. I love when Grant talks about this because Grant and I are very similar in a lot of ways. And Grant always talks about how when he's getting toward the end of a project, he starts to speed things up and maybe rush a little bit because he just wants like, oh, all right, now I'm at that pivot point where I'm pivoting toward the end, and like all caution goes out the window. It's like, yeah, no, we could totally do that. That'll be fine. Everything will be great. It's like that's when it's like, why do mistakes happen in the last 20% of a project? That's why, because of people like Grant and me, because that's what we do.
Yeah, well, and that's why I always do things once before I document it, because it's like, I'm just going to let this be all the screw ups. So like, yeah, if I get feeling a little wild and decide to rush everything, it's not the one that's like documented. Because, yeah, I mean, I would definitely do that, too, especially because like for a while I was posting multiple instructables every week.
And oh, wow.
So, yeah, I would just get so hyped up about, like, getting something out and published that, yeah, I was just blowing through everything at the end just to get it up and live because I wanted, like, the serotonin hit.
Well, I remember the second time I finished NaNoWriMo. And you can sense, like, if you read the story's building and developing and characters are getting their own chapter. And it's really good. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, NaNoWriMo is a National Novel Writing Month. It's a 50,000-word novel. And I think around 45,000 words, I was done. Like, I was like, I am so done with this whole damn story. And I pivoted from strong character development to everyone dies. It's like, it's just easier. Like, I don't have time for this. Like, I just want to get my little medal in my profile. That's it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is part of the reason why I've never attempted that. Because I have an English minor and like was really into writing when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of friends that will do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the pressure of the length and the amount of time. And it just, it's too much. And I just know that, yeah, I would end up being like, I'm just going to finish it. I don't fucking care anymore. Like, it would get sloppy.
Do you know how I got through it though? Seriously, like the way so when I was looking at it as a thing I wanted to do, I was looking at the task, and right, and the task is 50,000 words in 30 days. So, okay, break that down. It's 1,633 words a day. That's not a lot to write. Like, especially if you're a writer of a writer mindset, it's really not, it's not even a full chapter. Like, it, yeah. Unless you're writing really short chapters, it's not even a full chapter. It's about maybe half a chapter, I would say. Mm-hmm. If you're really, really of the idea that you want to finish it, what I did, I broke it down into 1,633 word chunks. And I had a spreadsheet, and every day it would say,
nice. Like a day progress.
One. Yes. And yeah. When you see the progress, that's when it stops feeling like an impossible task. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, this is doable. I ended up finishing the first one. I finished it on the 20th of November. And by the real, well, finished, I crossed the 50,000 mark on the 20th of November. By the 30th, I had 61,000 words. So I had an extra 11,000. It looked insurmountable on the 1st of November, and I did an extra 11,000 words, because it's just those little milestones. Like, you hit one, usually on the first day or two, and everybody that does will tell you the same thing. Like, the first day or two, you'll hit that 1,633 and then some. I hit 4,800 or 5,000 on day one. Once you get that lead, you start getting really excited. Like, I can really finish this fast. And the first one, I finished it in, you know, essentially 23 days. So, but yeah, it's, I would say try it, break it into smaller chunks. Don't look at it as one big ball. Look at it as a lot of smaller pieces. And I'm telling you, it's going to feel a whole lot more doable. And what I did for the last one when I did it, I actually just wrote some character outlines. That was all I did. I didn't do anything else. Like, who are the characters in this book and what are they about? And I didn't do that for any of the others. And
this is what I wanted to ask also. Like, yeah, are you preparing a lot of in advance to write?
First one, I wrote literally off the cuff. Story that developed. I started with a premise that there was this girl who was a blogger, and she ended up getting cyber-stalked. And it just went forward from there.
Yeah.
And it just was like, where the story goes, it goes. We'll figure it out. There are three major plot holes in the book, and I am perfectly fine with it. But I was so happy with this. This is how you can tell a noob. Like, you know, everybody says, act like you've been there. I didn't even act like I'd been there. I finished it. Do you remember Lulu? So Lulu was a before Amazon did Kindle Direct Publishing, there was Lulu, and was what people would call vanity publishers or vanity presses?
Yeah, vanity publisher, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, I can get my book published. Oh, and I can get an ISBN for it. So I always brag, like, I'm very excited that my name is in the Library of Congress. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I've always wanted an ISBN number, and I'm very jealous of the friends I have who have them. Because I've got quite a few at this point. Yeah, I have written books, and it's just like, oh, I need one of those.
It's kind of a cool feeling. I mean, now it's even easier to get, because KDP makes getting published. It was a process. Like, I had to take the Word document and format. Like, imagine sending a Word document to a publisher now. Like, they'd be like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Get an InDesign, dumbass, and start designing the page the way a book is supposed to be done. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. And in fact, on the back of it, because I didn't get to design the covers, I just had to do generic graphics for the front and back cover and the spine. And you don't get to really tell them where they put the barcode. The barcode goes in a certain spot, but they don't give you guidelines. The barcode is covering part of my picture.
Oh, no.
It's hysterical. It is absolutely hysterical. But you know what? It's such a cool accomplishment to be able to tell people you did it. So all this to say, since you have that tendency to be a writer anyway, I think you should totally try it. You definitely could do it. It's not as hard as you think. I've seen people write some wild, wild stories that, you know, they ended up, I had one friend who wrote, you know, did the 53,000 words that he did. And then he turned it into a full-on novel and sold it, got it published and sold it. So it was like, because that was wild. That just uncorked the story. And he just filled in where he needed to flesh it out more to make it a more proper novel. So if you have an idea, that's not a bad way to develop it. Yeah. Even if it just breaks the wall down and gets you going.
Well, it might just be the way my brain works too, because when I think about writing, I am very sort of structured, and it's like, okay, so what am I going to write about? All right. What are going to be the big story arcs? Who are the characters? Like, I need to do an outline before I really get into it. I really have to have more of a plan. Like, I get a little nervous if I just jump into something and I'm trying to just sort of go with it.
Wait, you get nervous when you jump into something? Jesse, that's so that's such a surprise. Like, it's out of character for you.
Yeah, it's real bad. It's definitely one of my biggest flaws as a person. I just, like, I can't do it, but, you know, I'm trying.
What the irony of somebody who does what you do, you know, getting, like, you know, new skill or new thing nerves is definitely the irony is very, very thick.
It's so bad. And it, like, I really wish I could say that it's gotten better over the years.
Totally, it never does.
Like, it just doesn't. You know, I wish I could say that I'm, like, really comfortable on camera and I feel good about it, but no, I don't. It's weird.
I always tell people that, you know, I always tell people, anyone that's met me, it's hard to believe. Nobody believes me when I tell them this, but I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. I am super introverted and painfully shy. I am one of the most painfully shy human beings you ever meet. And I've had people go, well, then how are you so comfortable in crowds? I'm like, wait, what makes you think I'm comfortable?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have these, you know, your conversation, you're easy with people, like, it's fun, you're having a good time. I'm like, you know how much work that is? You know how exhausting it is?
Yeah, exactly.
So this past weekend, I met my fiance's, most of her friends. And by the way, yes, I use the word fiance, everybody, but yes. I met my fiance's, most of her friends from around the country came to New York for the weekend, and I got to meet a whole bunch of people, and they're awesome. Like, her friends are fantastic people. We had an amazing time. It was great. Yesterday evening, I was exhausted. I mean, just tired, and not tired because they're bad people, not tired because it's difficult to hang out, because, I mean, come on, it's hanging out. Grab a drink, you know, tell a joke or two, have a good laugh, pay attention to what everyone's talking about, engage when you need to, everything's fine. And like I said, they're awesome people. So it wasn't that it was work. It's just to be on when you're really, your tendency is to not be on. It's like, I don't want to do this. And it's not because I don't like you. It's because my brain doesn't want to do this all day long. It's like, I need away time.
Well, and I think I'm struggling with that a lot more now, because I've been working from home here in Colorado for 7 years now, which is wild to think about. But I went to an offsite in April to Portland, because we have an Autodesk office there. And I knew almost everyone, had worked in person with almost everyone. They were like two new people that were in our group. Yeah, I went back to my hotel every night and just felt like I was going to die. I was so tired. Like, I couldn't even make words with my brain. I was just completely wiped out. It was just like there was nothing left that I could give. And, you know, those are people that I didn't have to prepare myself mentally for and get all like all psyched up to go out and do it. So, yeah, like, new people is very scary.
overcompensating introverts don't get enough credit. They don't. No. Because the ones that are good at it, you never know. Like, he's so comfortable with everybody. He's so, yeah. Because he is really trying to be comfortable with everybody. Yep. Like, you know.
Or in my case, it's like, yeah, because that's my job.
Right, exactly.
Every time, that I've worked a convention or a maker fair, I always get compliments on how good I am with people, but inside I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to die. This is so horrible. Please let me just go back to my hotel room, like, the whole time.
All I think in a lot of situations where there's a lot of people around, all I think repeatedly is, I'm so tired. Like, that's all that's going through my head. Like, people are like, what are you thinking? I'm thinking I'm freaking tired. That's what I'm thinking. Yep. I'm really, really tired. Yep. It's hard.
I want a snack and I want a nap.
Exactly. I will say this. And one thing that it's, you know, I'm glad I'm able to do it because I do have friends that are not able to do it. And it's a hard thing for them to deal with too, because when you're getting a group together to do something, you know, I have one friend who, you know, her big theme is don't bother making plans with me because I'm just going to find a reason. I'm either going to say no or something's going to come up last minute. So don't even bother. Yeah. And, you know, and it's, nobody judges her for it. It's just not her thing. It's not, you know, you make one-on-one plans. She's all in, like, let's do this. You make group plans. Yeah, it's probably not happening. You probably just make the group, assume the group will not include her and everything's going to be fine. No, you know, you won't be offended. Nobody's going to be hurt by it. Yeah. Which, yeah, again, is weird because you're in community management. You bump elbows with a lot of people. I do a podcast for 90 minutes a week where most of the time I'm talking to complete strangers.
Yeah.
And it's like, yep, but here we are just doing our thing. And like, you would never know if I didn't tell you.
Yeah. It's so funny, though. It's like if anybody asked me to make phone calls at work or do something like that, I would fall apart. They would instantly realize what a failure. Human I am, but I'm really good with words.
we had a moment in the last company I worked for where we were doing outbound calls for basically for customer service purposes, but they weren't to customers, they were to our clients. We had a product that we had put in all these retail locations, and we were calling these retail locations to make sure the product was working, that they were, everything was okay, if they needed any additional consumable supplies and whatever. And the job was get on the phone, call as many of these people in a day as you can. That's a simple job. I felt like it was torture. Like, yeah, I wanted to die every day. I would put it off. Like, the first few people I talked to were very cool. One of them said, if you're going to call the stores, here's the times to call. Otherwise, don't call at all. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, because this is when we're all busy. I'm like, oh, thank God. So I would schedule my whole day around it, and then I would sit there with my phone and the list and everything set up on my screen, and I'd have my phone in my hand, and I had my finger over the keypad and dialing and it's only the first one. Breaking the ice of making that first call was always the one that got me. Once I made the first call, it's like, nah, I'll call them all now. It's fine. But getting through making that first call every time, got me every time.
Yeah, for me it's every call.
you have that breaking the ice moment repeatedly throughout the course of the day.
Yeah, it's like heart rate at like 130 and it goes back down, and then the next call it's right back up, you know. Like, because the last retail job I had, I worked at a used bookstore, so we always had way more stuff than we could ever sell. And so my job for a little bit was to call schools, hospitals, daycares, that sort of thing, to see if they had kids that needed books, which is awesome. Like, you're never going to have people screaming at you when you're offering them something for free. There's really no reason I should be terrified of it. But like, that was one of the worst times in my life working, because I was just terrified every single time, and I just could not talk myself out of it. And like, it's still like that with me, because like, I always have a lot of health problems, and just calling doctors, like, I swear I'm like giving myself a pep talk before every single one, because it's just like, it's okay. You're not going to die. No one's going to scream at you. It's okay.
So in other words, what you're saying is, your biggest torture moment is you go on the app from your doctor to make an appointment and it says, please call, the app is down for the moment for maintenance. Please call this number. And you're like, yeah, I guess I'll be trying the app again tomorrow. That's
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh my God.
I'm not bleeding profusely right now. I could get away with it extra day. It'll be fine.
A little bit. Yeah. Oh,
we could triage this for a day. It'll be fine.
Yes.
Can you believe, by the way, we have been talking for an hour and 5 minutes already?
Have we? Oh my God. Yeah.
Look at that.
We're paying attention to the timer at the top.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, it's wild doing this and like not coming in prepared. Mm-hmm. You know, like on Clamp, we always have a topic, and I feel like I try to do a little pre-work, but I told myself, like, just chill out and show up and it'll be fine. And it was.
I have freaked many guests out. when they're like, what should I bring? What should I prepare? I was like, nothing. Just bring you. Yeah. I'll guide you. We'll have a good conversation. Everything's going to be fine. Yeah, but what are we going to talk about? Let's see where the conversation goes. How are we going to do that for an hour? Let me worry about that. It'll be fine. and that's the funny part of, you know, there's like two schools of thought. There's this where, you know, I come in, I have nothing to write notes on. It's literally just me talking. And then there are other people who have a very structured podcast. And it's interesting when you see that, like, everything works for different people. That doesn't work for me. I don't have the wherewithal to prepare this show. Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
Like, I think the most I'll do is, like, because I get a lot of agent pitches. Like, I'll get people on that are people I've never heard of and then read the agent pitch and go, that's interesting. Yeah, I'll definitely talk to that person. And I'm like, okay, I better do some research and figure out what the hell they do. You know, it's like just so I can talk to them about what they do. But, you know, when it's somebody who I know reasonably well, like you, it's like, nah, we'll just get Jesse on. And I'm pretty sure I can find an hour's worth of things to talk to Jesse about. And we did. So it works out really well. You know what else works out really well? Having a very interesting, super engaging thing of the week. And I have a suspicion, but knowing your history, that it might be a horror movie?
I actually went DIY for this.
Wow. Okay. Very good. Very good.
Yeah. So this is actually a person that I have recommended on Clamp before.
Okay.
So some people might be familiar, but she goes by the Trans Handy Ma'am.
Okay.
Which I love so much. Her name is Mercury Stardust. And I can't remember now if she has 14 or 16 years of like building maintenance experience, but she's amazing. She does a lot of stuff on TikTok and Instagram. I think she might also have a YouTube, but I don't watch her there. But she does a lot of tips for people who are traveling or for renters where it comes to safety and things like that in your home and how to fix simple things, you know, like plumbing or a hole in a wall, like really easy stuff. She's just, I don't know. I love everything she does because none of it is from a place of ego. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not doing this to make herself the expert. She's doing it to legitimately help. She answers people's questions and she's very caring when it comes to the trans and LGBTQ communities. So it's like, you know, it hits all of my wheelhouses. I love everything about her. I watch her videos even when I know how to do the thing just because I love listening to her.
She's basically teaching, she's no offense millennials, but she's basically teaching millennials all the stuff that they didn't ever learn how to do.
Yeah, millennial like, life skills.
that's great. I actually had a conversation with a millennial once and I'm not making this up, you know, believe me if you want, I don't care, but I actually asked a millennial, I was like, do you know how to change a light bulb? And they're like, no, I call the landlord for that. I was like, oh my God, that you people really do exist. Like, and I don't even judge them. They just never, it was a skill they never had to learn. Like in the back of my mind, I'm like, how do you function not knowing how to change a light bulb? But then it's like, again, it's not because they don't want to know how to change a light bulb. It's because they've never had to know how to change a light bulb. So this is exactly the kind of account. Yeah.
And that is exactly what she always says. It's like, you're not stupid for not knowing how to do this. You just haven't had the opportunity to learn yet.
Yep.
And I really love that.
We had a substitute teacher in high school. His name was Mr. Epstein. Mr. Epstein was a gym teacher, like an old school, probably about 5'6", probably about 260 pounds. Like he looked
sounds like my gym teacher.
Yeah, basically bald old man. Nicest guy in the world, right? And he had this very thick Brooklyn accent. And I ended up finding out later on that he was a teacher so long that my father had him at gym in his high school on the other side of Brooklyn when he was a kid because he knew who the guy was. He's like, oh, yeah, Epstein. He was my gym teacher. But and that's, by the way, how my dad talked. And that's how this guy talked. So he's sitting there one day. He goes, you know what the difference, you know, is everybody calls everybody stupid. You know, nobody's actually stupid, but there's a lot of people who are ignorant. Ignorant just means you don't know. Stupid means you know and you don't care. You're not stupid. You're ignorant. You didn't learn. It's not your fault you're ignorant. You just need to learn. It's like this freaking...
It's very true.
fat little old Brooklyn guy with his big old Brooklyn accent, just like, he's got these profound life pieces of advice. But I think that actually fits his channel really well. So on Instagram, it's Mercury Stardust Tops, T-O-P-Z. And I will definitely have the link in the show notes. There's an Instagram account. There is a TikTok account. There is a YouTube. I mean, what a social presence. Yeah. 448,000 followers on Instagram. Jesus Christ.
Well, and she's grown a lot, because I feel like I started following her when she was like around 100,000. Because her TikTok audience, I think, is the major one. You know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Because she's gotten articles written about her on TikTok. So let's say.
Well, because she just came out with a book also. Like, I think that is where like the new wave of traffic is coming from, because she's in the Amazon bestsellers right now. So, yeah.
2.4 million. On TikTok.
Yeah, right?
My God.
Crazy.
How about that? Good for her. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Wow. So mine is another YouTube person. I have been following Toy Polloi, T-O-Y-P-O-L-L-O-I, for a very long time. I was telling Jesse before we started, he is one of the first people I ever really followed, subscribed to, watched every video of on YouTube. And basically what he does is he fixes vintage toys. Like, he restores them, he fixes them, he does a lot of crazy repairs. He loves taking Lego pieces and using them to fix toys. I have learned how to restring the rubber band legs on G.I. Joe's, how to fix Masters of the Universe figures. Like, I watch this guy, I find it to be just pure therapy, just watching this guy mm-hmm. fix the toys of my childhood. Like, first of all, it's really cool seeing how the toys of my childhood worked. That's cool by itself. But watching them get brought back to life is just so damn cool. And this guy is such an engaging, plus he's English. So, you know, it's like he's got this very gruff, but a nice English voice. And we're gonna fix this over here. And there's a little sort of this. We're going to fix it like this. And it's going to look amazing when we're done with it. That was more Australian than English. All right, forget it.
Did go Australian at the end.
He went a little Australian for a bit. I should start reading reviews and accents. That's never been done before. but seriously, follow Toy Polloi. If you're into... I've never seen him do, I don't think I've ever seen him do Transformers, but he does a lot of, his toy fixes tend to focus on a couple of toy lines, Action Man, G.I. Joe, Mask, Masters of the Universe, and what was the other one? Star Wars, all the Star Wars toys, like the Kenner ones and others. And it's just a really cool channel. He's a really cool guy. He gives a lot to the community. He makes, for some of the toys that he fixes, when he makes a sticker sheet for something he fixed, he actually scans the stickers and he makes a sticker sheet available on toypolloi.com. So you can, if you're doing the repair, you can do it yourself. And he's just a really great guy and deserves all the follows he can get. He's fun to watch and does some cool stuff. So, and especially if you like old vintage stuff and vintage. Oh my God, the stuff from my childhood is vintage. God.
Yes.
Good God. What point
we're
have we
old.
Hit? I know. Jesus. But you know who's not old? Actually, they might be old, but you know what? Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It's the people that support this show financially. So whether they're old or young, they are definitely supporting this show. And those people include Matthew Serio from Artigiano Serio, Big Al Schultz of New York Woodworks, Tori Decker of Tori Did It, Ed Swanson of Ed's Clocks and More, Jake Drews of Make With Jake, Megan Chris from Onyx Designs Woodwork, Christian Neary from Warren Works, Ken Madden from Mad K Studios, David Wood of DW Woodbuilds, Dean Duplantis, Jeff Stein, a.k.a. A Weird Guy, Kim and Garrett from Kim and Garrett Make It, Rory Langefeld of RLO Woodworks and DIY, Robert J. Keller, Brian Arsenault, the Seven Hills Maker, Lars Coleman of Colorado Multicraft, Dave Bauer of Dave Bauer Art, Nick Birchtold of Birchtold Design Build, Donald LeBlanc of Fun With Woodworking, Ross Cave, Jeremy Spies, Grant Alexander from The Clamp Podcast, your co-host there, Brad Harrison of Brad's Customs, and Billy Poulton of Poulton Projects. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. I'm realizing as I'm having to take more breaths as I'm reading the list that the list just keeps growing, and it means a lot to me.
That
to
was
see
pretty
me.
Long. That was awesome.
It's amazing. Like I always think like, oh, okay. I know the list grows when I have to change the graphic that people mm-hmm. see on the YouTube version. And yeah. It's like, oh, I got to change the graphic for this episode. Cause I added 3 new people this week. And I was like, wow, that's such a nice feeling. So thank you, everyone who gives me that warm, fuzzy feeling. But paying me is not the only way to get that warm, fuzzy feeling into my belly. You can also give me that warm, fuzzy feeling by sharing the show, giving it a review if you like it, or even if you don't like it. I just ignore the ones I don't like. But, you know, if you don't like it, feel free to say that too. And if you have a moment, another way to support the show, and I mentioned it last week, and some of you really did, and I noticed the difference, so thank you. If you could watch the show on YouTube, even if you don't, you know, watch the show, wink, wink. If you could let the show play on YouTube, wink, wink, for the full show, wink, wink, and let it go so that my watch hours go up, maybe we can get this monetized on YouTube, and that would be very helpful. So that's another way you could support the show. Watch it on YouTube. I'm not saying don't download it. Download it. Listen to the audio version, of course. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt to put it on YouTube and just, you know what? Here's what you do. Before you go to work, put the Digitally Creative Podcast playlist on.
Yeah, I was going to say, pop the playlist in.
Exactly. Hit play and then go to work. When you come home, all the episodes will have played. Well, no, actually, unless you're working a 40-hour day. Yeah, no, but
that would be a while.
But yeah, a lot of those episodes, those watch hours are going to tick right up. I'm only partially kidding, but I would appreciate it if you would watch the show on YouTube, because, you know, the video episodes are there, and you get to see cool things like Jessie's background, which is really awesome, with all the embroidery hoops that she's made over the years.
And a giant tree. Yeah.
It's perfect. It's like you set this up for recording. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Don't want people to see my ugly closet doors.
I was going
to
ask.
Behind those.
I was going to ask, do you have a standing desk?
Yep.
Okay. I thought, I was like, she moves so freely in her chair. And then I realized, like, dumbass, she's standing. Yeah. That's why she moves so freely.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a really hard time sitting because I'm a fidgeter. Mm-hmm. So this just works out better for everybody.
If I could only show, and maybe one day I will take a picture of all the fidgeting things that I have that I keep out of sight of the camera, you have no idea how much fidget stuff is here. Like, no idea. It's a pile of fidget. Okay, I'm going to show you one of my favorites. This is one of my favorites, and I can't touch it during the show. This is, I forgot what it's called. I think it was called the key clicker.
And I was about to ask if that was keycaps.
Yes, it's a bunch of mechanical keycaps and some Cherry MX switches, and satisfying.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So satisfying. But if I sat here doing this on the podcast, everyone would lose their freaking mind. I love this thing. It's one of my favorite fidget things.
That
the other one,
really fun, actually.
Oh, here's one. Here's a classic. You'll remember this one. Remember when these were really popular?
Oh, yes.
This is the real one, by the way.
So many 3D printed versions of that, on Instructables for a while. Yep.
It was really funny because I ordered this on Kickstarter, and while I was waiting for it, I was like, all right. And I saw the cheap Chinese knockoffs started showing up on Amazon. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see how good the knockoffs were. And I got one knockoff that was actually really, really good, and I was very excited about it. I was like, this is good. I'll keep this, and whenever the other one comes, it comes. Then I got this, and I was like, wow. The real one is so much better than the knockoff ones, but this is a problem. But again, another one, like if I sat here doing this, everyone would lose their mind. So I don't have any quiet fidget toys, so I just keep them aside. But
I just push everything back on my desk because I want such things. Like I have so much stuff. Like we've got a pin of things. Like I just
scissors.
So much stuff.
Scissors.
I could
scissors
mess
are
with.
My one of my favorite fidget toys. Like I had a pair of scissors on my desk in my old job. I always kept, I never used them. They were literally a fidget toy. I would sit there just going like this.
It's such a satisfying noise. I really like it.
Well, especially when they're really new and the metal scratches as they close, that sound. Oh.
Yep. That's why I love my metal pinking shears, because of that noise.
You know, this is why I don't make fun of people who are, I don't get it. I don't fully get it. I understand it. The ASMR people, I always find them a little weird. But I also understand it a little bit, like, because there are some things that are just super duper satisfying. And that's like that sound of scissors opening and closing, that love
so
it.
Good.
Well, we could talk about the sounds that satisfy for the rest of the show, or I can let Jessie go, because I grabbed her right after work, which was very kind of her to offer. we actually were scheduled for Monday. I was like, would it be okay if we did Tuesday, afternoon, evening, whatever? She's like, yeah, no problem. So as we're recording this, it's June 27th. This episode's releasing June 28th, and it's 8:30. You know what that means, don't you? I got a lot of work to do.
Yes.
So I am going to punch out, but I'm not going to punch out without saying thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for being flexible with your time, by the way. I really appreciate that more than anything else. Why don't you tell people where they can find more of you and learn more about what you do and more of the Jesse Ratfink experience?
So I am really only on Instagram. You can find me at Jesse Ratfink on there. Okay. If you're interested in my embroidery work, I have an account on Instagram called Making Jiggy. So you can check that out. I have a ton of followers and never post and feel really bad about it.
Holy crap. You do have a ton of followers.
Yeah. I really built it up. Like, my business was booming for a while before I just fell off a cliff with it.
I'm following that account.
Yeah. Are you? Yeah, I was quite big for a while. And then, yeah, Instructables, you can find me, Jesse Ratfink, on there. I have almost 600 tutorials, mostly craft and leather working and sewing and cooking. So, yeah, if you're interested in any of those things, I have tons.
Absolutely fantastic. Jesse, it's been an absolute pleasure. And congratulations on the success joining the Clamp team. And those boys know how much I love them, especially Grant. Grant is my brother from another Canadian mother. So I love Grant dearly. He's one of my closest friends. And I'm very happy that all of you have kind of formed this great little bond and kept that show going, because it's hard when a host leaves. It's good to not try to fill the gap and just be, you didn't try to be the next Morley. You were the first Jesse, and it's been great. True. And I've been really happy.
I couldn't
for
be
you.
A Morley replacement. He's too charming and has great hair.
I was just going to say, nobody can mimic the hair. It's the hair. Yeah. It's got to be the hair. You know, with the Michael Jordan commercials, with the Nike commercials, it's got to be the shoes. Well, with Morley, it's got to be the hair.
Yep.
As soon as he grew the hair, he took off.
Yeah, you know, you might be onto something there.
Not a coincidence. I need to just grow my hair. I got a lot of work to do, but I can probably make it happen.
It might take a little while. It'll
take a minute. I'll have wispy dreads. That'll be my new look.
Oh, I don't know that that's two words that go.
Let me tell you something. Isn't that worth enough to stick around with this shit show for another year? But thank you so much for listening, for watching, however you watch the show. And I will catch you next week. Oh, no, I won't. Actually, no, I won't catch you next week, because next week is July 4th and I'm not going to be around until Tuesday.
Yep.
There's parties galore. There's drinking a happening, and I am not going to be in any state to deal with podcasting. So there won't be an episode next week. I might go into the archives and pull a good one and just repost. I think I am going to do that, actually. I'll do that. But there's not going to be an episode next week. To hell with that. You guys can live without an episode for 1 week, because y'all are going to be drunk just like me. So have a great drunken 4th of July, and I will be back again the week after. Enjoy, everybody.